Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed. I'm Kat Napsok, and this is another edition of Star Wars Ranked, the 90th edition of this show, in which we take topics of Star Wars, big and small, and rank them, because that's what it means to be a fan, and honored to have with us today, not only a regular guest here, but a co-founder of the Four Center podcast feed, Joseph Scripshaw. Hello, sir.
Happy to be here. I like hearing 90 because I want to be as old as one of our podcasts someday.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I want to go out like Carl Reiner. we are here talking about a fun topic. It is the best unsung heroes in Star Wars. And we do admit this is somewhat similar to a very early episode of Force Center. So early, it was recorded in like three living situations ago for me. And it is an older podcast. And that one we did like minor characters that affected the fate of the galaxy. So, Joseph, similar vein, but this is a little different. Unsung heroes are those characters that have done great things, are great themselves, and we just want to shine a light on them for what they've done.
That's right. Some of the characters I think on our list are like fan favorites of Force Center listeners and certainly of ours. But some of them are the characters who just they don't get enough credit inside the galaxy or here in the real galaxy.
Yeah, absolutely. And some, like I said, popular. Some of the names we're about to list there are like, well, yeah, I know that name, but we want to focus on some of the specific aspects of what they did in the Star Wars story and how if we as fans can help appreciate even those actions, even more specifically than just the character. So that's what we got here today. As always, we want to remind you this podcast is brought to you by Audible. If you want to get a audiobook on us, try one out. Like, say, Shadowfall, which Joseph and I are going to be reviewing this coming week on Force Center. Go to audibletrial.com/Force Center and get a free audiobook on us. Try it out. Support the show. audibletrial.com/Force Center. Joseph, let's dive into this list. Let's preface this as we sometimes do, like our thought process, how long it took. Was this one of those, oh, this is easy. Oh, wait, I can't. How did you approach this list?
Yeah, once I got into the groove, the names started flowing. And I rarely do this, but I just kind of went through by era because I knew that there are characters from lots of different eras of Star Wars that would seem underappreciated to me. I think I learned that I appreciate a lot of Star Wars characters. Mm-hmm. And want them maybe to be even overappreciated, if at all possible.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was my process. Was this a difficult one for you?
Well, the most difficult thing was forgetting the names on that original show we did, which again was similar. And even you had pointed out to me, like, we're not doing this, right? It was like, oh, yeah, that's right. So I had a couple names. I was like, as I was making my list, I was like, wait a minute. He's made that list before. I got to take him off. But I love that. I love kind of being forced to, as they might say in football, check down to another receiver, find another target and focus on it and make it happen. And that was part of the fun of this list today. So we're going to dive into the best unsung heroes in Star Wars, beginning with Joseph's number 5.
All right, my number 5, here's the first character who is unsung that I would like to sing about, and that is Captain Panaka. Panaka is one of those characters that, you know, especially from you and I's perspective, 1999, and you see the action figures, like, who's Captain Panaka? Who's the C.O. Bibble? Who are all these characters who are going to thrill our souls? And then you meet them, and they aren't as flashy in the movie at first. But over the years, Captain Panaka in particular has expanded in all of the great novels, in particular in The Queen's Peril, Queen's Shadow, Leia, Princess of Alderaan. There's some upsetting stuff with Panaka. But yeah, really just kind of I love the way his character has developed because it matches so much what's in The Phantom Menace and what I think should be sung about is that he is somebody who comes from a planet that truly does believe in peace and believes in communication to resolve problems. But he's also that guy who's like, yeah, but you know what? Every once in a while, the peace doesn't work out and you got to be ready for that. And he's clearly a character who believes in the traditions and the democracy of Naboo. But he has that like, yeah, but the other shoe is going to drop. But you kind of have to respect. And through that, he helped come up with the whole handmaiden decoy bodyguard program that we learned about in particular in Queen's Peril. There's more in Queen's Shadow, but Queen's Peril is the actual, you know, beginning of it all.
Yeah.
And then you just go to his actual actions in The Phantom Menace is that security is his job. The thing that he was maybe a little paranoid about, a little bit too worried about, oh, it happened. Communication disruption, invasion, and Panaka, you were right. And then throughout the entire movie, he's like admirably trying to do his job while also being super respectful, where he just has to keep going like, hey, I'm worried about this. You know, I was already right. Security is actually a problem. We should actually be concerned. Okay, the queen doesn't want to do that. Okay, I'll go along with that. You know, we should actually be concerned. Oh, the Jedi don't want to do that. Okay, I'll hold my fire. Okay, all right. And he's just so incredibly, he pushes for his agenda, his perspective, and then he also works well with others. And then when the time comes and the queen truly needs him, he steps up and he kicks ass.
This is a great choice. And I'm like you. We were there in 99. I love that you described that figure. Like, ooh, Captain Panaka. This is, he's going to, is he like our Captain Solo? You know, you have those weird expectations and you're right. He's almost muted his times, right? He's just very businesslike. Hugh Quarshie that plays him is a very accomplished stage actor, brings that kind of gravitas to this role. So he plays it well, but then you kind of, you know, it wasn't what you're expecting. And then what you're describing, Joseph, is exactly what happens. He's so interesting. What E.K. Johnson has done with this character, and we can make jokes about that. Those books are somewhat Panaka and the Handmaidens, like a new sitcom on CW or something like that. And that would work. But you're describing him perfectly. He saw what was coming, or at least felt what was potentially, not specifically coming. But then I love his kind of relationship with the Handmaidens of, is at times some frustration, definitely mentoring, definitely guiding, but really learns. And he has to learn. He allows himself to learn, to let them develop as humans, as young women, as handmaidens to this queen. He lets them kind of be who they are. And I definitely think his wife helps him in that regard. And also, I love that he just wants to go home at the end of the day and have a meal with his wife. That's kind of his goal.
That's his whole thing. I want security. So, and I kind of relate to that. It's like, I just want everything to be good. So at the end of the day, I can, you know, eat pasta and watch an episode of Succession with my wife and just not worry about it. And I feel like that's what Panaka's like. And then, you know, to kind of spoilers, if people don't know the whole arc of Panaka, you can tune out for 30 seconds. I love how deeply it's developed through all of these, you know, young adult novels. That tragedy of Panaka being somebody who legitimately worries about security, and that leads him down a road where he is incredibly susceptible to Palpatine and to that fear mongering that Palpatine does so well, to take a healthy concern about danger and explode it into paranoia that can justify and blind you to truly awful things. And I really like both the heart and the stoic, steadfast nature of Panaka, and then ultimately the tragedy that these good qualities are manipulated so well by Palpatine.
Yeah, and I think I always point over Game of Thrones that some of the actions of the characters might be deemed as bad or failures, and that's the point, because you're supposed to maybe be affected by it and learn by that. That's Panaka, even for someone like me specifically, and some of my real world beliefs or something. It's like, all right, hey, check yourself. Make sure you're always challenging what you believe and what's going on around it. And I think that's a valuable lesson. And it's a very interesting thing. I remember when I first learned, and it was Legends at the time, then it becomes canon, of like, wait a minute, Panaka became a governor for the Empire? Like, how did that happen?
A moth? Yeah. How's this?
Like, whoa, like you see how it happens. And I thought it really, Queen Shadow, but Queen's Peril. E.K. Johnson did a great job of taking this character, making him robust and multi-leveled, and that includes failures and growths, and it's all there, and he's truly unsung.
Yeah, so thanks for letting me sing about him. That's my number five, Captain Panaka.
Panaka, the song of Panaka. We need a Panaka musical on Disney Plus. I think Lin-Manuel Miranda can pull that up. We're going to go with my number five. You know, I didn't even think about this. I made a last second switch here before I emailed you my list this morning, and it lined up a little bit with your list here. My number five is General Carlist Rykan.
Ooh.
Now, Rykan at no point does become an Imperial Moff. I have always loved Rykan, portrayed by Bruce Boa in Empire Strikes Back. It's interesting to me because, you know, I grew up, all three of the movies kind of fell into my lap at the same time. So I always say I have a weird relationship with 2, 4, 5, and 6 because I didn't see 4 early. I didn't realize I was watching it. I was 1, but so I wasn't like waiting for Empire, right? We talked about it before. Leia is positioned in the opening crawl of New Hope as a princess trying to save her people. It's a trope, right? It's a fantasy thing, and you kind of get behind her as she's the rebellion. Yeah, there's Jan Dodonna, a name who almost made my list too here. And then come in Empire, you realize it's bigger. It's a bigger structure, right? And Leia's part of it, a key part of it, and she's the emotional core of it in a lot of ways, or at least part of that core. And then you got this guy, Rykan, shows up. And he's working with Leia. Leia kind of answers to him clearly because, you know, she's kind of makes reference to, well, General Rykan says, and, you know, and I've just always been fascinated by his fatherly, grandfatherly presence, quiet, steadiness, his ability to look and listen to those around him, make command decisions when he needs to. Then his story rolls out in canon a little bit more. He appears in Lost Stars, appears in some other stuff, Resistance Reborn. He appears, he's brought back after all this time. I think he's a steady presence in this rebellion when it was all crazy, when they had to evacuate, they had to run around. And I think it's someone like him just continued to be there for the rebellion, even up to the Battle of Jakku with some of the stuff in Lost Stars. And I just in a rebellion full of explosive leaders, Saw Gerrera or Dignity, Quiet Dignity, Mon Mothma, but she's the face of it in a lot of ways. Akbar, Radice, who you know I love. There's this guy Rykan. He's just like, yep, I know what we got to do. Okay, cool. Well, we're gonna evacuate. Send Rogues 10 and 11 to over here. But, yeah. And I just really always loved Rykan, and I just want to shout him to the rooftops today.
Yeah, I think that's great. It is interesting that you and I both gravitated for the top, for number five on our list, to people who have a sort of a quiet dignity while dealing with security and war.
Yes.
But I mean, he's one of these guys. He's like, he's been in my life for so long, seeing Empire Strikes right. Back and being so obsessed with it. And, you know, just the rhythms of him, just like he's just there. I didn't think about him for a long time. But I really love that what you're pulling out about him of he has that that feeling of just quiet. Yep, I am absolutely making decisions. I'm in control, but no drama, no stress. And in particular, the scenes with him, he's got this like, you know how improv is yes and. He has a sort of like, I acknowledge that sucks, but no time to deal with that. Let's move on.
Not good, but let's go.
Not good, but let's go. Because that's basically like, that's how we meet him, is Han being like, sorry, I got to leave. And he's like, well, I hate to lose you, but bye.
Yeah. Yep.
Not gonna throw a fit about it. And like, I always think about, you know, especially as I got older, as I was involved with the, you know, nonprofits and theater groups and things that are like scrappy and have absolutely no resources. As I get older, watching the rebels just finish setting up the base on Hoth and go, okay, well, screw all those resources, screw all that time. We immediately have to leave. We'll have to get a grant to cover some of these losses. But he has that same attitude too of like, oh yeah, no, this is terrible, of course, but there's no time to be upset or say it's unfair. We just have to go.
Rykan, the creative director at your local theater. That's just I've never thought of it in those terms, and it's accurate.
Yeah. So
I'm very happy you actually brought up the Han Solo moment. That's part of the reason I love him, and maybe over the years grew to appreciate Rykan even more as I became a director of security myself and running a team, where it's like sometimes you have your star employees or someone and they're going to make a decision and that causes you to go, or I had to mentor people into a promotion at another location, which meant I'd lose them. And you just, it's the best way. And I've seen other people hold on to their, you know, employees that they lean on with a tight grip, and that doesn't help anybody. And so I do respect Rykan for being like, yeah, I hate to lose you, Solo. You got to do what you got to do. That also allows Leia to flourish with him, because I don't necessarily think Leia is working underneath him in terms of the rank structure. She's probably working with him, but you know, there's no power struggle there. He respects her decisions. She respects him. He lets her be who she is. He supports it. He'll say what he's going to do. And I think that's a powerful and important trait in a leader. And Rykan is that as well as a theater director.
Yeah, he is multi-talented.
Could he direct the Panaka musical, or at least,
Yeah, absolutely. And he would direct it in Los Angeles, where, you know, you hire an actor and then they drop out because they, you know, get a small gig on a procedural. And you're like, well, you're a great actor. I hate to lose you, but we'll recast.
I was going to say, can he get the Go Picture for the Panaka musical? You're a playwright, sir. What is the equivalent of Go Picture? Is it go? I don't know what it would be.
I think it'd go jazz hands. Yeah, let's go theater.
There you go. So that is our number fives. We're starting strong, and we're moving up. It's only going to get better here. We got your number four.
Yeah, my number four I feel extremely passionate about, because they are well-known characters. They're characters that I think we sometimes have empathy for but make a lot of jokes about, and I really want to appreciate what they got right, and that is Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru. Owen Lars, Beru, white son, Lars. they get vilified a lot, right? Because particularly Owen, because he is so grumpy. He did try to keep the truth from Luke. He tried to keep Luke down on the moisture farm and away from his destiny. You know, I was growing up a lot, especially as a teen and really anxious to move out into the world. You know, I really shook my fist at Owen of like, let him go. He's staring at those twin sons and he just wants to be a part of things. You monster, Owen. He's grumpy and maybe he was a little bit hard on Luke. But Beru seems really loving, really understanding, immediately pushing back on Owen of like, he can't stay here forever. And, you know, his friends have gone and, you know, have some empathy for the kid. But I think when you look at it, especially compared to so many other kids in the story of Star Wars, from Han to Jin to Kira to on and on to Rey, Luke actually probably had a pretty good childhood because of Owen and Beru. You know, they were loving, you know, maybe a little gruff, maybe a little hard on him, but he was clothed, he was fed, he had friends, he had a land speeder and a D-16 Skyhopper, and he clearly had people who cared about him. And, you know, there isn't anything super explicit in the story, but for me, a part of why Luke just kind of glows as the figure of the light side, even though he does wrestle with his own, you know, impatience and proclivity to anger and frustration, I have to believe that part of that is of his power in the light side is that Owen and Beru gave him maybe like a slightly boring, slightly stifling childhood, but they must have given him just so much love and they must have taught him, you know, kindness and empathy, along is clearly just responsibility and like a work ethic. I feel like they gave him maybe a frustrating, stifling, but a loving childhood, and that helped make Luke the hero he became.
Yeah, a lot of some base level stuff. Even the love angle and the support is one thing. And yeah, Uncle Owen is cast in the traditional role every coming of age film needs. There's no dancing in our city, you know. That's him. But it the Star Wars story expands that. But even with Beru and even simply Luke making green milk from a thalassiren later on, he's probably like, oh, just like Beru used to do. Like, so those base level things probably. How to treat people. You got to imagine he learned a lot of that from them. He did, you know, it's important to know. We talk a lot about Leia and the Organas and their influence. I think you're right. There needs to be more of maybe analysis and look at Beru and Owen's influence on him. And I hope we get a little bit of that in Kenobi. If we do get nothing confirmed, I don't think, but nothing, you know, the Joel Edgerton coming back or something like that. That would be an interesting angle to approach. Just like him saying, "Hey, stay away, Kenobi. We're doing this the way we feel is right."
Yeah, yeah. And I'm always real big. There's little bits and pieces of it in canon you can cling to. But Owen and Beru had a relationship with Shmi, you know, and this is Shmi's grandson, and I think there is real love that connects through the generations there. That they can give to Luke. And I would love to see that just kind of explicitly dealt with in the Kenobi series would be awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, absolutely. Oh, great. Number four.
One other thing I'm going to throw out real quick about the number four. This is an opinion that of course listeners are free to disagree with, but a part of the reason that I think about this a lot is because, you know, people wonder, well, why did Rey take the sabers there? For this place that, you know, was Luke didn't want to be there. And he, you know, saw his uncle and his aunt die there, some famous smoking skeletons and all that. And I get that concern, but for me, I'm always really affected because I think it's Rey going on a pilgrimage and, you know, who knows where else she visited, you know, did she fly around the asteroid field that is now Alderaan, you know, but I think especially watching Rey slide down into the homestead really asks you to connect the childhood that Rey had to the childhood that Luke had. Mm-hmm. And yep, it was boring. Yep, it was stifling. Yep, it was keeping him from his destiny. But he had everything that Rey longed for. He had people who loved him. And I think that there is a power in that when I watch The Rise of Skywalker of Rey reflecting on Luke's path and her path mm-hmm. together.
Yes. No argument from me, sir. I absolutely think you're spot on. still love that ending. Love it with all my heart. And for a lot of those reasons you just mentioned, going back to where it all began for us as fans too, not just,
yeah.
That was a fan moment as well. Like, remember where your journey began? At least the story's journey. Anyways, that's another show. That's your number four. My number four is, well, I'll say the name that inspired the list. We do talk about him a lot. Oh, he gets a lot of press. He gets a lot of coverage. Not always in a positive light, but we love him here at Force Center. It is Dexter Jetson. Oh, man, I love this character. And yes, I agree. Everything about him and his diner is silly. It is silly. Even down to the menu and the salt and pepper shakers on the table, like you're going to Mel's Drive-In on Sunset. Like, I get it. And Flo the waitress, you know, as a droid, FA7. We got Hermione Bagua serving there as well. You know, working her second shift, just trying to get enough money to support her family. Like, it's all there. And I know it's silly, but we feel here at Force Center collectively that this is a great little addition to the Star Wars story. We love it because Obi-Wan gets to go hang out there, and it shows a different part of his life and different part of Obi's relationship with those outside the Order. It's all great. But on a base level, and I think I might have ranked him higher if I didn't think Kenobi, you know, wasn't smart enough to figure some stuff out on his own, because I trust that Kenobi in time would have maybe figured out a lot. But he also, Kenobi's smart enough to go seek help. He's to seek others' advice and input and question things he doesn't know, or, you know, not just assume, the trail's cold. He goes to Dexter. And Dexter's the one that's just laying on the line. Oh, that's a Kamino saber dive. We make fun of that line or in a loving way. That's not, that's this wisdom versus knowledge, but this wisdom that Dexter has. And he gives Kenobi the information he needs to go further, to search the truth and find the truth. So this is one of those moments that definitely affects the fate of the galaxy. And again, would they have discovered some of the stuff on their own? Would Kenobi have figured some of it out? Maybe. We didn't have to, because he had Dexter. And Dexter, just a life lived full of that knowledge and wisdom and experience and a good nature, with a big hug, with his pants falling down. I literally launch it, have a Disney Plus series launch called Dexter's Diner, and just have it be a real classic Star Wars sitcom, you know. And people, Twitter would go aflame, and people would claim Star Wars is dead and Disney is dumb, and I would sit there every week just going, this is my favorite show, because Dexter really, to me, just influenced the fate of the galaxy. But look at that scene for what it is. We often do here in Force Center, we often reference it. I think 20% of databank brawls happen in Dexter's Diner for good reason. And I just love Dexter. And he is, I was watching Attack of the Clones the other day in preparation for our Obi-Wan and Dooku scene by scene discussion on the main show. And I watched that scene. I was just like, man, he doesn't give enough credit for even just knowing what the saber dart is. I want to talk about Dexter. So Dexter's number four on my list today.
Oh, you're speaking my language. I absolutely love Dexter, and I love the sitcom Cheers, so I'm all in for Dexter's Diner. Yeah, I mean, you're right. On the surface, there's stuff around him that has caused fans to be challenged by and or just furious at the existence of Dexter and his diner. From big push broom mustache to baggy pants in the 50s diner. Like, yeah, I get it. But yeah, we've talked so much about everything that we love in that scene. But what I really do love is that the difference between knowledge versus wisdom is an important idea. That's why he knows the saber dart. It's not like Obi-Wan is like, I'm going to go see my friend who is the nerd who collects saber darts.
Yeah.
And he knows the different markings. That is such an important theme to Attack the Clones and to the prequels. It goes to the Jedi's hubris, that in the same way that Jocasta Nu can't accept that maybe her records are wrong, the analysis droids are like, that can't be that. And that idea that, okay, you've compiled all this knowledge, and knowledge is great, but knowledge is just facts, and they are useless unless you actually apply them, and then they become wisdom. And I think Dexter Jetster is this extremely weird symbol of kind of the galactic version of street smarts is really cool. And, you know, I'm all down for the Dexter's Diner sitcom, but also, like, I think this is Dexter's retirement, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know exactly how long Dexter lives there, but I think he's had lots of adventures. I'd be happy with also the adventures of young Dexter Jetster, which would also really anger fans. But, you know, he encountered that saber dart, you know, prospecting on Sub Tyrell, right? And
yeah.
So he's already been a prospector. What the hell else has he done in his life? He's been a prospector and a diner owner. What else has he been up to?
Suddenly reminded of the Tom Waits prospector character in the Coen Brothers Western anthology Netflix film.
Oh,
that's a great idea. Like, you know, I would love at some point Laura Santeca and Dexter to sit down and talk and share notes of the lives they live. And yeah, great point. And this is when you and I and others look back at the prequels. These are the things where you dig beneath the surface level stuff and see what Lucas was trying to put out there. And it's not too far below the surface. You see it, the knowledge versus wisdom, Jocasta knew versus, it's not there, Obi-Wan. And I'm not, you know, and Jocasta's a fine character in her own right. Like I love what they did in the Vader comic with her. I think she's got her place and purpose in it. We don't always mean to, slag on her for what she did in those moments with Kenobi, but it's the juxtaposition. And put that with Mace and Yoda and Obi-Wan having kind of the conversations about Jedi nowadays, including the older Jedi. And yeah. I think it's all there. That's part of what Lucas was saying. Like, look, they had all this knowledge, and they and this guy in the diner who's out there really living it is the one who's got the right path, including Liam pulling the shades and all the kids telling Obi-Wan where his missing map was. So, it's important. It's part of the Star Wars story, Dexter and his diner.
Yeah.
Oh, man, now we got to, yeah. That's the show. You go to Dexter's Diner. Someone sits down for a meal, and hello there. I'll tell you a story. And that frames the flashbacks. We got it.
You ordered a Jawa juice and a story.
Seriously. I love this. All right. We're up to number three. And oh, yeah, this is a name I would want on your list, sir. What is your number three?
My number three is a Jedi from this era that we were just talking about. And it's one, if you've listened to Force Center, you've heard me go on and on about Tara Sanube. This is the much older, advanced in years Jedi who pops up in a couple of episodes, largely in the background, but features strongly in the episode Lightsaber Lost, where Ahsoka loses her lightsaber. And she is at first just sort of like young people. I don't want to team up with this slow, old person. Like, yeah, I get it. Wisdom, respect your elders. But in Tara Sanube is not only just a great character in the very traditional sort of morality play story of don't judge a book by its cover. He's got that great twist at the end where he moves fast when he has to. So he's not saying don't move fast. He's saying, wait until the right time. Be super patient. Take your time. And then when the moment is right, whip out your lightsaber, which you hide in your cane, which is so damn cool. Cane sword. He's cool. I love him for teaching these fun, interesting lessons. But I kind of put him on. We need to be singing about him more because I think this is kind of pivotal episode for Ahsoka. If you do look at the Clone Wars it's a collection of stories. It tells a lot of people's stories, but Ahsoka is where we begin and Ahsoka is where we end. And the Clone Wars is kind of her journey. She is the spine of the story. This is kind of an important lesson for her that you can see her picking up on later of the idea of, in particular, patience, really knowing when to strike and not judging people based immediately or situations based immediately on their appearances. And in particular, the patience is something she could maybe pick up a little bit from Kenobi, not so much from Anakin, but I think Tara Sanube's got to be one of those Jedi where she said, okay, I learned these valuable lessons from the Jedi. Now I'm not sure if they're following through on them. So I think what Tara Sanube teaches Ahsoka is important to her journey.
That's so true. And as her story continues to be important and grow in the Star Wars world, and you go along the way, and it's just a simple thing. The old guy hooked up with the young student, to learn a valuable lesson. It's and the stories you can tell, and how many times just in our own world, I worked in a retirement home, an old folks home, if you will. That was my first job for 3.5 years. And it's so easy just to see these hallways of folks with experiences and stories just be ignored. It's sad. It's tragic. And for Star Wars to even remind us of that lesson, to not let that happen, to find the value and pass it on down. I love that. And I love Tara Sanu, but I love that you love him. And I really want one of those Kane lightsabers on the market.
Wow. I know. I scoured Galaxy's Edge. Any Kane swords? Any Kane swords? We'll see.
Kane swords. And there's a figure of him, right? I'm trying to remember. Did we do that yet?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. Maybe I'm blocking it out because it's super expensive and I don't want to deal with the heartbreak. But I'm going to look into this.
Mm, yeah. Great character. And part of the fun of the Clone Wars, because you had the time to go into little corners of the Star Wars story on that series.
Right. There was never going to be a big action scene featuring Tara Sanube in, in Attack of the Clones.
But I'll tell you what, for that High Republic series, all right, come on, I want to page you about Tara Sanube.
Yeah.
Great choice for your number three, and we are up to my number three, which is, well, this is a name we know, a name that gets a lot of press, a name of a character that is loved. It is K2SO. All right, follow me here. I want to just specifically talk about the moments in which he came in and saved things, you know, on Jeddah, shows up, gets them out of trouble. That's just on that base level. If they're captured, the mission changes dramatically. Also flies in to pull them out of Sarkarera's castle or stronghold as they're about to die. Pretty good. And his final moments, which are well documented, and I think a very powerful moment. I talked to a lot of people. I think I'm in that category too. Of all the deaths in Rogue One, believe it or not, K2SO is the one that pulls my heartstrings the most. A lesson of choice over programming, a valuable lesson there. And because it's the first death, they got they killed off the droid, if you will. And I remember in the theater going, I'm like, oh no, I think they're going to do this. These people aren't going to survive. Oh no. And so it's a powerful moment. And then he sacrifices himself to buy them time. He gives them the information and they don't probably get those Death Star plans without him. So every step of the way, it isn't just that he's funny and a wisecracking droid and Alan Tudyk did a great job voicing him and actually portraying him there on those stilts on set. There's a lot to love about this character. I think people do love this character, but I don't want any of his accomplishments to ever get lost. I think he was a key factor in the success of the rebellion during this very big week in the rebellion's existence. Scarif to Yavin. So K2SO, all his jokes focus on his accomplishments.
I think that's great. I love the spin you're putting on it because he does have a lot of great jokes. He's a great different energy for a droid. He adds a much needed spark of mirth at times to Rogue One. But you're right. He does just totally on Jeddah. He saves everybody's life twice. And he's there working away to get everything up and running to escape Edu as well. But I also feel like I'm sure people, you know, think about it, talk about it, consider it. You and I haven't talked a ton about just that little beat right toward the end of his life. I agree with you that it is a total sacrifice. And I think he would have done it regardless, because I think he was very loyal. And there's this clear, even though it's a reprogramming, I think there's still this like clear bond between him and Cassian that we'll get more of in that Disney Plus series as well. But that moment where Jin gives him the blaster and he seems actually emotionally affected that, yeah, you know, he was worried that she would have a blaster and why did she get to have one when he didn't right at the beginning of their relationship. And just that gesture of Jin showing him respect and showing him that you're a part of this team and like you wanted one. And, you know, we get that line from K2SO that is, I think, is as close to being super emotional as it can be of your behavior continues to be surprising. I'm paraphrasing. I'm not studying for a trivia contest right now. And I think that's just like a really nice moment because it really sells that he's not just protecting Cassian. Now he's protecting Jyn. He's protecting the mission.
Yeah, protecting the rebellion that he's now a part of. I love that moment because, you know what, as you're talking about, it made me think of one of our favorite moments in Rise of Skywalker, which is Rey telling 3PO, you know the odds better than anyone, which is such this wonderful just final moment of, not final, but just one of the big moments of respect for this character that we all love that's been just crapped on his entire existence, all movies.
Yes.
And so for Rey to acknowledge that, but just have that moment with Jyn doing somewhat of a similar thing, because droids, you know, they don't necessarily get a fair shake in Star Wars. And I love that there's that constant theme, you know, most noticeable with L3 and her droid rights kind of campaign. But like beyond that, you see it time and time again in new modern canon, just, you know, who are these droids? And look at their accomplishments and what they've done. And you know, and rewatching Rebels like I am right now, Chopper, who I initially did not like that much, now second time around, and I've seen a lot of these episodes again, but it's my first full rewatch, episode one to the finale is what I'm doing. I mean, Chopper's winning me over even more than I knew, because not only just for what he does for saving the day, but just being part of it, part of the story, part of the personality, the perspective, any advice, any comments, it's there through Chopper, that old little fart bot, as I used to call him. And I just think going back to K2SO, it is one of the first times that moment with Jyn. Yeah, it's pretty powerful. And it sets up, by the way, I think, that loss, just in terms of simple storytelling. You're like, oh.
Because he goes from, you know, always snark, even like, you know, I'll be with you because Cassian told me I had to. You know, he goes to that moment of heart, and then you feel it when his eye lights go out.
Oh, so sad. I'm going to have to watch that today over lunch just to get sad over some noodles. So that is my number three, K2SO, choice over programming, but also accomplishments that saved the galaxy, which means now we're up to your number two.
My number two is also from Rogue One. We are in sync. My number two is Lyra Erso. Again, I think this is a character that people do like, but really looking at her, the quality of the character, what she believed in, what she stood for, and what her actual actions were and how they impacted the story is all really inspiring to me. A big chunk of Lyra is from the Catalyst novel, where we learn that she has this relationship with Galen that is the kind of like, well, we're kind of different, but that's what's interesting and exciting about our relationship, that she is a very passionate person, that she is the term that I use, not force sensitive, but force aware, where she's never going to be able to even tap into the force enough to move a pebble, but she believes it and she can kind of feel the big sways back and forth. Which I think is a really interesting character, particularly since she's this Kyber crystal expert and this hunter of these kinds of this part of our galaxy that is really alive and thriving, and great representation of the big Lucas themes of the natural and the organic and the flowing versus the rigid and the mechanical, that Lyra is very much on the side of the flowing and the natural and the organic. So I just love the character as we get to see her in Catalyst. It's great to watch Rogue One and be able to add that to her small amount of screen time. But then even in Rogue One, you know, it's significant that she does pass on that energy by giving that Kyber crystal necklace to Lyra. And I think that necklace ends up being this great, not only just symbol for the, kind of that side of the paradigm of Star Wars, but to my reading of the film, it's the necklace that Chirrut senses that brings them together. You know, the strongest stars have hearts of Kyber. He's reacting to that necklace in a way that's like this sort of the spirit of Lyra, not literally, sort of starting to build all these necessary connections. And I think that's this great tribute to Lyra's connection to the Force and giving Jin this sense of both hope and defiance. And that's the other thing I wanted to say about Lyra is it's a tragedy that we lose her so early in the movie. But I do like this story where she's just like, no, I'm not feeling the live to fight another day. I'm not going with you, Krennic. This is utterly unacceptable, and I have to stand. And that's represented so well in the movie that she starts the thread of, you know, you will never win. And it goes all the way through to Jin getting to say that to Krennic when it's finally true.
I'm literally applauding you. Yes, right? That is the first indicator of what's to come, but also a powerful indicator of what's there inside Jin if she can just discover it. And that's part of Jin's journey. You're so right. This story of rebellion really does begin there. Of we always ask, you know, when is it time for the rebellion to fight? And Radis and a lot of others have opinions on when and where, but Lyra right then and there knew and shows it. And that's not, you know, Galen had to make some of his choices in his career and it was a different thing. I get it, but that's I think that's forgotten in a lot of the conversations about Lyra. That's the first moment of rebellion in that movie. So applause for you, sir. I love that.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah.
And shout out to Valine Kane, Irish-born Valine Kane, who portrayed her in just the brief moments that we do get her. And yeah, it's brief, but it's impactful. And a lot of it due to just her as an actor in those moments with the young Jin and the earnest you know, passing on the crystal and the lesson there and knowing what's happened. And we talk about tough decisions for mothers in Star Wars, Shmi being the leader in that category of making the toughest decision. This is right up there. This is right up there. Jyn Erso might not have been the chosen one that goes on to bring balance to the Force, but she saves, along with K2 and Cassie, essentially keeps the hope of the rebellion alive when it was ready to die out. And Lyra getting her out of there and sending her away and making the decision to go back, which also probably bought young Jin some time to go escape and hide. Very important moment for the rebellion.
Yeah, yeah. Lyra is up there in the Mothers of Star Wars pantheon.
Absolutely. And check out Catalyst if you have not ever read that or heard that. Use that audibletrial.com/4Center link because Catalyst knows it's just a really good book, but that you get a ton of Lyra stuff there. Lyra and Galen, I think, are a great couple in Star Wars. That is your number two, which means we're going to go up to my number two. And this is another one that I feel is a name people know, a name people actually love and respect, but I think it still has to be highlighted. My number two is Paige Tico, sister of Rose. And look, Rose is perhaps even unsung within her own resistance. Just playing in story, I think even she's unsung. But Paige is there. And love the use of Paige Tico. Absolutely love this, taking a very Star Wars moment, an unsung, unheralded, just person becoming a hero, doing some really almost miraculous feat to save the day, and then using that to not just teach Poe a lesson, but to literally slap him in the face with these losses, and it haunts him, and it's something that sticks with him later. And that's because we as an audience have seen the face of this resistance, the face of this hero, Paige Tico. We've got to live with it, and we got to see her loss felt in Rose. And then we also got to see Finn, part of Finn's journey, when he just is kind of compared by Rose against Paige. Finn falls short, and he has to grow to exceed any expectations that are there as a hero. And I just love the use of Paige in a story sense. And then I just love the Paige Tico in this sense, just a belly gunner who was overwhelmed, who was frightened, who was scared, who, by the way, wasn't some, I'm going to grow up to be a soldier. Her and Rose got involved because of what they saw the First Order, what it was doing to their world and their culture and their, the stripping of, of materials, and it was the Empire Reborn, and they saw it and they made that choice. That's one of the reasons we love Tally Lentra here too, for a lot of reasons, but Tally Lentra could have been a farmer's daughter and just stayed on Pip-Pip 3, her home planet. That's part of the Star Wars story. And for Paige, that sequence, which is so well shot, and the sound design, everything about that, the slow motion, not often used in Star Wars. Love that shot with so much in that sequence. And it starts the movie. I love that she's down and out. And it's just this, like, it's almost three acts in its own scene. It's almost the story of the rebellion and then eventually the story of the resistance in one scene of you get involved, you're trying your best, you get knocked down, and you got to choose to climb back up and save the day. And it might end up costing you your life, but that's part of the sacrifice. That's part of why you join. It's a very, very powerful little visual essay on what Paige it represents in the Star Wars story. And I just, can't have a conversation of unsung heroes without the belly gunner of the Cobalt Hammer that saved the day. And if she doesn't, by the way, this is why the complication of, Poe, like, I get where Poe's coming from. I get where Leia's coming from, but I get where Poe's coming from. They don't take out that dreadnought. The resistance might die right there in Dakar as well. So,
yeah.
Thank you, Paige.
Yeah. I think that I applaud you. I think that's great. You really point out lots of interesting, great, specific details about Paige. It is shot so well. It is told so well. It is acted so well. You know, obviously, a lot of the shots towards the end, the slow-mo, grabbing the controller and that holding on to her medallion. But I love that shot of her once she realizes that her crew is dying. The rest of the crew of the Cobalt Hammer, and she has to do it. And the way she unbuckles her helmet and has it, it's perfect for the, like, I'm already doing something scary and now I'm being asked to do something even scarier and I'm scared, but I know I have to. And it reinforces everything that you're talking about, that she is obviously a great character in and of herself, but pivotal to Rose and so pivotal to all these intertwined thematic arcs of Finn, where she is held up as an example of someone who really thoughtfully considered what does it mean to be a hero, and I'm going to be that.
Right.
I'm going to choose to fight for the right thing, and that means doing, terribly frightening things. So, helping Finn's arc there, and then helping Poe's arc with the really consider when you ask people to make the ultimate sacrifice. It's really, really powerful. And I love the way you say it. Like, you can just watch this short film called, the Bravery of Paige Tico, and it's all there.
Yeah, the Bravery of Paige Tico is there. We are going to take a quick break in a second, but that is our list so far. We got some honorable mentions and our number ones. It's been fun discussing these unsung heroes in Star Wars. Stick around. Star Wars, right?
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time.
For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey, Force Center fans, don't forget Force Center is on YouTube. Head over there to catch up with our new show, Star Wars Show and Tell. Joseph, Jennifer, Ken, and special guests sit down and share favorite items from their own Star Wars memorabilia collections. Plus, there's the In Memoriam video series, encore presentations of Databank Brawl, and special programming all there for you, and more shows on the way. It's Force Center on YouTube. Check it out. Hey, Force Center friends, make sure you're keeping up to date on all the great content from Jennifer Landa. Whether it's YouTube, Instagram, or TikTok, you whippersnappers, Force Center's own Jennifer Landa continues to bring you fun, informative, and insightful laughs and moments.
Also, Jennifer brings her experience and perspective as a Star Wars-loving mother to her DIY projects, blogs, and more. So be sure to head on over to JennyLanda.com, that's JennyLanda.com, for articles like how to make your own Darth Maul sneakers or 10 unique Star Wars baby gift ideas.
Follow Jen on Twitter and Instagram at Jennifer Landa and on TikTok as JenniferLanda1138. All right, we are back here on Star Wars Ranked, the 90th edition of this show in which we rank things big and small. And today, it's ranking the characters that might be considered smaller in the eyes of the story, but they should be considered big by you. We have had a lot of fun discussing these things. And Joseph, I love when we just kind of take a character we have discussed before and peel back even more layers. And that's part of why we do this, you know?
Yeah. I feel like I've learned so much by chatting with you today, and I have even more characters to celebrate this afternoon. I got a busy afternoon.
Busy afternoon, indeed. And we had some characters that almost made the list. We call them our honorable mentions. Hey, we didn't create that term. Hey, so what do you got on your list, Jason?
I have Larma Daisy. Really like Larma. I think she's great in Rise of Skywalker, but in particular, her debut in The Last Jedi, just a great actor. So she comes across with charisma and gravitas and emotion. But, you know, there is a long history in Star Wars of characters who must dump exposition, and Larma Daisy is the Jedi master of exposition. She, if you watch Last Jedi closely, She lays out so much just bare bones information, and you never feel like you're getting an exposition dump.
Never do. No, not at all. She should teach a class on that.
She really should. How to Deliver Exposition by Larma Daisy. Or I guess Amanda Lawrence would probably teach the class. Weasel was a runner-up for me. Because talk about a character that just turned their life around, going from being a kind of what looked like kind of a criminal buddy of Watto to somebody who is willing to fight to make things right in the galaxy. Also, just kind of a great story in terms of the debate of how much should the movies lean into kind of minor Star Wars canon that thrills fans. And that was just such a fun detail. Like, yeah, you know what? Let's make it the same character. So Weasel's high on my list. I know I mentioned this character a lot, but Oniho Zaya. This is, of course, the kid on Canto Bight who actually tells the story of Jedi Master Luke Skywalker to Temuera Bleg and Ar-Shella Saar, I believe. It's great to have the story, but you got to have the storyteller. Mm. And I have to celebrate any character in Star Wars who makes custom action figures. I still want that. I got two more on my list. Opeepit, we both love from Star Wars Resistance. He is a great background character that everybody involved with him knows he is a background character. Like, he's literally, you just see him passing in the halls with his cleaning equipment. He eventually gets a couple short moments to shine, but just like great weird design that had been floating around, and they finally put it to work, and just, background character with just so much flavor. I am a huge fan of Opeepit, and I know you are too. Mm-hmm. And then my final runner-up, Ken, is the Bothans. They are in some ways the ultimate undersung hero of Star Wars because, of course, we only know them as a line of dialogue about being kind of undersung heroes. Like, many Bothans died. Let's never speak about them again. And I know there's been some stuff in expanded canon, but we've also heard rumblings that in modern canon, there's been various creators who are like, ooh, I want to do a Bothan thing. And for some mysterious reasons, the Bothans appear to still be waiting for their day in the Twin Suns, and I hope that comes soon for the Bothans.
Oh, yeah, that'd be... what's the one from... is it Boris Kvela or something like that from Zahn's Heir to the Empire trilogy, right? Is that?
Right.
Yeah, and even then it was like, the Bothans, So, yeah, I love that honorable mention choice because it is almost like Mothma is saying it. Like, and the unsung heroes... the Bothans. great runner-up list. Yeah, Opeepit, man. I want, like, I can't afford one of those iRobot vacuums to go around my house, but if I get one, I want a plush Opeepit to, like, glue to it. So just Opeepit's cleaning my house.
Oh, yeah. I'm not a big Halloween costume guy, but I would love a full Opeepit costume because people would be like, you got some weird pumpkin head. Is this something from some weird installment of the Halloween movie series I'm not familiar with? Like, nope. It's Opeepit.
It is Opeepit. Oh, that'd be great. My runner-up list includes probably some bigger names, but, they don't... their actions don't get treated as well as just their names. Nine Numb, I mean, come on. This guy's... Yeah. Co-pilot taking out the second Death Star. He is, Leia leans on him a lot in some of the early new canon material. Then he comes back in Rise of Skywalker, whether he's alive or dead, I'm not worried about that debate. He's there. He's there in Force Awakens. And it was great that he came back. He's there. I mean, Last Jedi, of course, too. But I think it's just one of those characters that he's a steady, steadfast guy who's been all around the galaxy and is there and ready for the fight and won't ever question it. He'll just be there. So Nine Numb indeed. Also going to say Captain Ramus Antilles.
Ooh.
Even in death, trying to protect what's going on, trusted by Bail to be very high in his own organization and house, but trusted to kind of work with, oversee, maybe even at times protect Leia. She starts her journey as a rebel. I think that's important too. And then, also wipe the droid's mind. You know, that's, if you don't wipe 3PO's mind, some secrets get out. And until he knew what to do and he followed through and Organa trusted it. General Jan Dodonna. I almost put him on the list. I went with Rykan just because I connect with Rykan a little bit more. I think Dodonna, you know, I mean, just the trivia aspect, the first character to say, may the force be with you on screen. I think I was really excited in Rogue One, especially when you get Sir Barriss Dinsalmi himself, was Ian McElhenney coming in there to play the character. And I didn't feel they did, you know, who knows what's on the cutting room floor, but, you know, so you've told us is kind of the only Dodonna line. I would have liked to see more of that. I just think, you know, he's one of those wise old leaders. A lot of, even when you go to Rebels where he does appear, it's like, we got to get the Y-Wings to Dodonna's cell. There's a lot too. I mean, a lot of key stuff there. And then my final one here, because I was trying to think Solo and Weasel. I'm so glad you said Weasel. Such a great character. Great use of connections. I got to say Rio Durant, a hero for the lessons he imparted to Han. And even though Han doesn't learn a lot of lessons fast and quick, he eventually takes him, or eventually he knows he can't run from the truth about himself. And I think in death, Rio kind of says, hey, I know you think you want this life. And I've kind of been saying it's a great life, but this ain't it, kid. And gives him kind of that final, like, seek more. And even though it takes Han a long time, I get it. I'm stubborn too, Han. Rio, that lesson, much like some of the stuff with Kira and everything, will stay in Han's heart, and he'll come to terms with it eventually. So as a Han Solo fan, I got to say thank you, Rio Durant.
Yeah, man, he's great. Is she nice? Does she have sharp teeth? That just speaks volumes about the culture mm-hmm. that Rio comes from. I do love that he is, like you're saying, he is the, I think in Solo, there are these two competing themes, these kind of the different pieces of wisdom on either side of Han's shoulders. And one of them from Kira is everybody serves somebody. And the one from Rio is this great contrast of, you know, everybody needs somebody.
Yeah. So that's my runner up. We have reached our number one choices for best unsung heroes in Star Wars. We'll go with my number one. So Joseph can close the show with his number one. My number one is someone that is getting some due, thanks to the book Queen's Peril and Queen's Shadow, and even appearance in the Vader comic going on right now. It is the handmaiden prime in our story, Sabe. I really just love this character now more than ever, and have a lot of gratitude in my heart for E.K. Johnson just kind of taking this character, taking this role, portrayed by Keira Knightley. A fun little trivia point, but kind of digging into what it means, what the moment means. And now, especially in Queen's Peril, just learning that, you know, the one chosen first, the one chosen because, hey, you're never the best. You're good at being number two, but that is what we need now. And stepping up to that call, connecting with the queen and a very, you know, deep level, as we learned in Queen's Peril. And helping her kind of, I think, adjust to being queen early on. And then I think helping kind of lead the handmaidens in a certain point of view. I wouldn't say the handmaidens have a leader other than maybe Padme or even at times Panaka. But you know what I mean? Like, help kind of just, this is what we got going on. And then in the big moment, which some we've watched and lived with since 1999, Padme captured. It looks like the assault on the Naboo Palace is coming to a bad end here. And there's Sabe stepping in, and to learn more about that moment even now. I know not everyone has read Queen's Peril. Maybe some of you don't want to read Queen's Peril. I've heard the book kind of, it's a coming of age story for some young girls. It's so much more than that. It's a big punch of a book into this movie and time period we love. And to learn that moment with Sabe, who is literally chosen because you look like someone else, you're used to being not as good as others, but supporting, and that's part of who you are. And this moment, it all comes to that moment, and she saves the day by just revealing herself as the decoy queen. I love that. And also, not for nothing, you know, she's standing in for the queen when there's a lot of important things going on, allowing Padme to go do some of those important things. And that, because that works, Sabe is there. So anyways, Sabe, my number one unsung hero in Star Wars.
Yeah, take that, the belief that Sabe always has to come in second. On your list, yeah. She came in number one. Yeah, she's always been a cool character. The Keira Knightley thing is really fascinating. You know, once you really tune into that, it is really fun to watch the movie and see how it actually functions. I love her story in Queen's Peril, that idea of like, you know, in many cultures, clearly in Naboo, and I think in ours, like sometimes coming in second just means you lost. But in reality, most times coming in second means you are amazing. And it is great to see somebody like Sabe really get to accept that. Like, yes, I'm going to define myself that way. In that big, every one of her key moments in Phantom Menace is highlighted and enhanced by Queen's Peril, but that real moment of bravery of like, I'm gonna step up and distract and get the battle droids coming after me, so I know Padme can go for those blasters in the throne. And it's a great moment, and Sabe does wear my favorite Padme dress, and it is only that Sabe who wears it is the Let's Leave Naboo black dress.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. Good point. And I can't remember if they've made a Sabe figure. I can't remember.
I believe they have. Yeah.
All right. I'll have to grab that. So that is my number one, Sabe, Handmaiden Prime, as I've now dubbed her. And even though there were handmaidens in Naboo's history before. We are now up to your number one choice, Joseph, for the best, most unsung hero in Star Wars.
My number one surprised me. I had this list. I was rotating around. I was thinking, who am I missing? And then, just like an epiphany in the Force, it came to me, Dio. Dio is perhaps an undersung character, because newer character, and also there's still a lot of people who feel kind of raw about Rise of Skywalker in different ways. We here love it. We appreciate that other people have challenges with it, and we respect that. But when you watch, you know, honestly, when Dio was first revealed, it was like, cool, interesting, minimal design. It did feel like, well, BB-8 was this kind of breakthrough, amazing, weird, new minimal design that felt perfect. And Dio felt like, okay, cool, but, you know, let's see what the character is about. And once I watched the movie, saw what the character is about, really dug in, saw other people commenting and connecting the dots, you watch Dio's journey in Rise of Skywalker, Dio is this thread of the power of empathy, that empathy really does matter. And it's easy to just say that, but I think what the film demonstrates, which I choose to believe is true in real life, is when you reach out in kindness and empathy, one of the reasons to do that is it will ripple out. And that's what Dio is representing. We see that Rey chooses to not just hack the Vexus apart, which she easily could, the serpent in the tunnel. Instead, she gives it some life energy. She explains this to BB-8 and has a little conversation with him. BB-8 then sees that Dio is out of juice, and BB-8 gives some of his energy, some of his life blood to Dio. Then we just have a general sort of empathy directed toward Dio from Rey, saying it looks like people have treated him badly, and well, you know, that's not going to happen anymore. You're with us. So there's that moment of just general empathy. But then in terms of that actual chain of empathy that Dio represents, Dio is messing around with Rey's stuff in that funny little scene. And then it occurs to Finn to ask Dio about Dio's story. And that's when, because Finn showed that kindness and empathy to Dio, Dio's like, oh yeah, you know, I think I was heading to Exegol. You want a bunch of information about it that'll really help plan the operation that will save the entire galaxy? And all of it represents his chain of empathy, which is great and fun and interesting, but it is all coming from this character who has been abused, in a character that has every reason not to trust. And it is charming and heartbreaking and funny and relatable. The no thank you, and just really reacting on just a gut emotional level, declaring things happy and sad. But in a way, by kind of paring down those big emotions, it kind of the character symbolizes to me paring down a lot of the noise and garbage that we can get obsessed with to just a basic emotions and valuing empathy. And if you value empathy, much like Dio, it will roll forward and it will make things better for everybody.
Yeah, it could quite frankly, literally change and save the galaxy.
Yeah.
Lead to that. It's possible. Dio represents that. This is a great choice for a lot of reasons. I think like I said, raw feelings from Rise of Skywalker from a lot of folks out there. We understand that. We respect that. And Force Center is a place to discuss your questions and your doubts and any obstacles you might have in front of you to understanding or appreciating a Star Wars film. And you might never get there. We understand that. But I think you're so right, Joseph. Dio represents just this basic thread in this story, this chain of empathies you've talked about, which is, I think, a Fleetwood Mac song. And just that little moment of Rey going, hey, yeah, BB-8, that's what I did. I saved the snake. And BB-8 getting to plug in and literally give his energy. I mean, it's right there. And that's the purpose. And that's where it goes. And it's an all hands on deck situation. Everyone's got a part to play in saving the galaxy. But those parts you don't just get to play them sometimes. You got to be, people got to understand you, or like you said, Finn seeking out the story. And maybe if BB-8 never gives him DL life, never comes to existence. But if he's just viewed as a little trash droid and sees that, sees beyond that, there's still spinning around the galaxy trying to get to Exegol. And that's part of the Star Wars story. It's part of the reason we're here to celebrate it. And not for nothing. Not only is he just really adorable, he's really funny. He's JJ voiced him very well. I'm all on board for it. And I don't have a remote control DL, but I love to chase some chihuahuas around with one. Dog. But I love DL. And I think it's a great number one for the list here.
Yeah. I mean, you could make the argument that, okay, well, you know, Rey sends the signal. That's what tells him how to get through all of the navigational challenges of Exegol. But it's the pre-knowledge of what is waiting for them on Exegol that allows them to make the plan. And all of that is impossible without Dio. So, you know, when I first saw him, you know, he had the chain of empathy with me, because when I first saw him, I was like, cool design, but what's the deal? And now I know the deal is that Dio is awesome and perfect to me representation of undersung hero, because he's one of these characters that, you know, Star Wars often reminds us everybody has value. Don't judge people just based on, or droids or basilisks, just on your first impressions. But what do they know? What have they experienced? Who are they if you bother to ask them? And Dio has a great answer of who he is when Finn bothers to ask.
Friend, I'm going to watch Rise of Skywalker over lunch again just to see some Dio. Great list, Joseph. Thank you for bringing all of those wonderful names and insights into the conversation today. If you out there listening have something you want to add to this list, maybe add some names to your own unsung heroes list, you can do so by reaching out to us on Twitter at Force Center Pod. Use the hashtag Star Wars Ranked. Like our Facebook page. We are on Instagram and YouTube as well. Make sure you're subscribed over there to catch our Star Wars show and tell, in memoriams, and other content on the YouTube channel. You can follow, grab the podcast wherever fine podcasts are found, like Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, iHeartMedia, iHeartRadio, and more. Head over there. And don't forget, you can support us if you want at patreon.com/ForceCenter. A lot of cool things going on here, including the new music here that's been on Star Wars Ranked for the last few episodes from the great Tony Thaxton that was made possible by all of you. We have merch at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. We also really are excited to dive in deep on these topics. We want to thank you all for supporting us on breaking up the main show, news on Tuesdays, deeper topics on Thursday. And we got more kind of new shows or returning shows coming up. We're going to announce this coming week. And it's all possible because of your guys' your support out there. We got our own stuff as well. You can follow me at Kadnapsuck. Go to kadnapsuck.com for more information. And Joseph, they can follow you at josephscrimshaw.com, unless you've suddenly changed it to .net.
Nope, I am still a .com. Not a business. Well, I am a business. I don't know what I'm saying. I'm a terrible advertiser. Anyway, you can find myself, myself and my stuff on josephscrimshaw.com, Twitter and Instagram at Joseph Scrimshaw.
That is true. Do that. Follow him. Follow myself. Follow all of us. Yes, do it, please. And don't forget Jennifer Landa, too. Please follow Jen and all her cool content, including the stuff on TikTok, a format I still don't understand. That's because I am like Tara Sanube of the social media world. That is it for this week. Star Wars has been ranked.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.